This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Just about 6 years ago, in a very different world, a terrorism trial got underway in federal court in Manhattan. The four defendants were members or associates of a group that most of us had heard nothing about in early 2001, Al-Qaeda. The men were charged with bombing two U.S. embassies in East Africa in 1998. More than 200 people were killed. I covered that trial in New York, and in the courthouse, I met Susan Hirsch. Her Kenyan husband, Abdurrahman Abdallah, known as Jamal, was killed in the attack outside the embassy in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Susan was inside the embassy, cashing a check.
We were walking to the embassy. We were joking. Actually, my husband was joking about how he was going to be going to America soon, and we had waited for this for a long time. And then I left him at the front of the embassy. He was going to wait there for me and smoke a cigarette. And I went in for an errand that would just take a few minutes. And while I was inside at the other side of the embassy, that's when the bomb went off.
That's Susan Hirsch talking to me in 2001. She attended the trial faithfully. Now she's written a book about the trial and its shortcomings and about her search for justice as a victim. It's called In the Moment of Greatest Calamity. Susan Hirsch is a cultural anthropologist and had spent years doing research in East Africa, where she met her husband. So when she watched the bombing trial in New York, she was watching not just as a victim, but also as a scholar.
As a cultural anthropologist, I've always specialized in legal anthropology and did quite a bit of research on Islamic law and Islamic courts in the community that my husband was from. And so when it came time to think about being at the embassy bombings trial and I found myself in that court, it was so reminiscent of so many times that I had spent sitting in courts and studying and analyzing. And probably at some point in the trial, it became very difficult to not look at the trial through that lens of the legal anthropologist.
A key part of this trial, for two of the defendants, there was a death penalty phase. They were convicted originally, and then the jury had to decide whether they should be executed. And when you and I talked back in 2001, we were talking about the question of the death penalty, which you knew that you opposed in this case. I want to play you just a bit more of the interview from back then.
If you're going to stand for wanting justice in your legal system, and if, as a citizen, you think that that's always something that's important, then even at that moment, when it comes to your house, to your family, you still need to stand for it. Not dispassionately, actually passionately. We should ask for punishment, strong, severe punishment. But taking the life of an individual criminal, we, I think, are bigger than that as a nation.
I've wondered if you've ever wavered in that view since then, especially given what happened on 9/11 and the notion that what happened to you and your family was part of something far broader and far more deadly.
Oh, not at all. I haven't sort of at any moment rethought it, but become even more committed, as I write in the title of the book, of what we need to do in the moment of greatest calamity. It's not easy at all, and we had to do that not as individuals, the choices that I had to make, but as a nation after the 9/11 attacks. And I think it's especially hard when we're dealing with violence on that scale, when it's affecting so many people with so many different views of how to act and such terror on a massive scale.
The title that you mentioned comes from something that your husband, Jamal, told you once.
Right.
What was that?
Well, it was a story of the death of his father, and it was a very emotional story, hard for him to tell it, but one that he found a lot of comfort in. When his father was very ill and close to dying, the family gathered, and they were comforting him, and then Jamal and his sister, one sister, realized that his father was dead, and before they were alerted to what had happened, Jamal kind of collected his thoughts and made a statement to them to say he's gone at this point, but let's be patient, let's hold back, let's do everything we need to do to prepare for the funeral, and then if you want to have emotional reactions, crying, that would be the appropriate time, that we have to be patient and do our duty to him. Before we give in to our own emotions.
And what's the lesson of that, do you think?
The lesson comes from a hadith, a story from the life of the Prophet Muhammad. And it is one that says that in the moment of great difficulties that might befall you, specifically the death of a loved one, that you need to have patience before you act. And to me, it's a lesson about not acting with revenge, not just lashing out. It's also an acknowledgement that that might be what people would want to do, but that tempering it is an act of dignity and an act of faith.
When you think forward from the embassy bombings trial to 9/11, what's happened afterward, and you think about that lesson, where does it lead you? What are the conclusions that you draw from that?
Yeah. Well, I think that it's pretty easy to see that in some ways, in that moment of greatest calamity, we did act in ways that showed some sober patience. If I think about the ways in which people helped one another on the streets of New York and the ways in which people wanted to comfort those who had been hurt, certainly many people acted out that aspect of it. But with the almost immediate military reaction to 9/11, we certainly see the other side of using violence as a reaction. And what concerns me more is what taking a military approach has led us to afterwards, incommunicado detentions, right? Abusive detentions and incarcerations of individuals. And secret detentions, people who have been sort of disappeared, who are major suspects. Given those options, bringing things back to open court, I think, is at least an initial step that will start moving us toward something more recognizable to us as a nation as a response to terrorism.
One argument would go, though, that things are very different now and that we are involved in something that's a war, and that the common tools of justice, maybe we were involved in a war back in 1998 and didn't know it, but we certainly know it now, and different rules apply. Do you see any merit to that?
Well, that's certainly been the argument that's been made over and over again, and I would think that this many years down the line, we now need to continue to revisit that argument and to think about whether the strategies that we're using in reaction are in effect furthering and enhancing that broader war on terror. And I think so many people have admitted that framing what we're involved in now as a war on terror has brought its own problems and its own confusions around the strategies that should be used. And one of the outcomes of that has been a move away from law. And I think that has been to our peril in some ways.
Susan Hirsch, thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much.
Susan Hirsch teaches at George Mason University. Her book is called In the Moment of Greatest Calamity. You can read an excerpt at our website, npr.org.